the border between the light and the dark stands Castle Grayskull. For countless ages, the sorceress of Grayskull has kept this universe in harmony. But the armies of darkness do not rest, and the capture of Grayskull is ever most in their minds. For to those that control Grayskull will come the power. The power to be supreme. The power to be almighty. The power to be masters of the universe.
Welcome to the Three Men in a Retrospective's look at Masters of the Universe.
Everything comes to he who waits, and I have waited so very long for this moment.
Part of Percolated Media's He-Man Retrospective Series.
Excellent!
With a new Travis Knight-directed Masters of the Universe movie coming out this summer, Garrett.
So, how does it feel to be the mighty warrior?
Adam.
It's always been between us.
And Matt.
Help! Help! Get me out of here!
Are set to review both cinematic iterations of the popular 1980s cartoon.
I have the power!
Starting with the 1987 Dolph Lundgren film,
He-Man, thank the sorceress you're alive!
I've been looking for you!
And ending with the Amazon Prime Pictures film.
Does it feel good?
These podcast hosts will decide if one or both movies actually have the power.
Whoa! All hell's breaking loose out there. Let's see what's up.
So get ready to lean your head back and laugh, podcast listeners.
Time for talk is over.
The Percolated Media Masters of the Universe review begins now.
Come on, we're moving in.
Masters of the Universe 2026. This was released June 5th, 2026. Budget on this was $200 million box office. This did not have the power. It's sitting at $102 million as we speak. And this is directed by Travis Knight. All right, guys. Well, here we are. Masters of the Universe has come out, and it took a couple YouTubers to fucking kick this thing's ass.
Yeah, I mean, look at the returns. They should have said, I have the receipts from all the studio heads wondering where their return is. But I'm going to be upfront and say this right now. If you're shocked at the box office returns by this, you clearly haven't been paying attention over the last couple years. So the fact that this is not doing well should not surprise anybody.
Explain why.
Oh, mansplaining? We're going to do this already?
Well, I'm just asking because Barbie hit like a billion. So that's why I'm asking.
I think Barbie is the anomaly, not the norm. And the frame of reference I'm using is the last couple of years with the Jared Leto curse. Let's start there. His last four movies that he's been involved in have been massive bombs. Morbius, Haunted Mansion, last year with Tron Ares. I think the guy is kind of box office poison. I know he's not the lead in this, and the marketing is doing everything to hide the fact that he's actually in this. But I think there's that, and there's also the thing of these properties that they're trying to like resurrect. I just don't think the audiences are fully there because it's, to use an analogy, it's like my grandparents, in case the two people on this podcast, for all intents and purposes, trying to tell me about how cool their stuff is. And you got people my age that are just like, I don't get it.
Adam, you agree with that?
I'm trying to figure out if I'm the grandparent in this scenario. I would have said no. However, I could not find anybody in my household to go see this with me. So,
Exhibit A!
That includes a 15-year-old boy. So, you know, I think Matt may be onto something, because that same child begged me to take him to go see Backrooms and wanted me to take him to go see Iron Lung and all this other stuff. And this movie, he could not give two telas about.
Well, this, as we mentioned last week at the end of that show, this had a long process of being brought to the screen. There were rumors, there were pictures released, actually one picture release of Panthor way back in 2007 when it was looking like John Woo was going to take the reins and direct this. And then we had a guy by the name of John Stevenson step in to direct as Evan Dougherty was being given the reins to write it. That was in 2009. And then Joel Silver was involved with it. He was developing it, and he was trying to get some backing behind it. And then in 2012, they had John Chu attached.
Oh, yeah, because it worked so well for that G.I. Joe movie he made.
That G.I. Joe movie, which came out, what, the year later, right?
It was 2013.
Yeah, so this is
2013. He did the sequel, because the Rise of Cobra was Stephen Sommers, the mummy guy.
And is watchable, unlike the sequel.
Yeah, I was going to say, that second movie.
Spoiler.
Even as someone who's not the biggest G.I. Joe fan. And to your point, look at Snake Eyes. When that came out a couple years ago, that thing bombed. That as hard as this one is. The 80s just aren't... I mean, now we're at the point where Transformers movies are not making money. We've had two bombs for that franchise in a row with Rise of the Beasts and Transformers 1.
This is
very much the brother of Transformers and G.I. Joe.
God, we're going to have to do G.I. Joe eventually, but I haven't seen...
If we're doing this, we...
Yeah, and I still haven't seen that second movie. I saw the first one when it was first released, so I don't have any memory of that. Then we had Terry Rossio, who was a writer on Pirates of the Caribbean. He was set to write a script that John Chu would direct. And then we had directors from Joe Cornish to Rian Johnson, Phil Lord and Christopher Miller. All of these people were in line to direct it. Jeff Wadlow, we talked about him with Kick-Ass 2. But in the end, it was Travis Knight who was named a couple years ago. And we were talking pre-show, Matt. This is all on the heels of Barbie, right?
Barbie is an inescapable kind of cloud that hangs over this movie. Because I think it's impossible to not look at that and say, well, what's the male equivalent of Barbie? Not to say that guys didn't go see Barbie. The thing made over $1 billion. So clearly, a lot of straight men either got dragged to go see it, or they were not as comfortable in their own skin as they thought they would be to go public. This is kind of the male counterpart. So I don't think it's... It wasn't a bad the bad rationale, because the intent was there, but giving $200 million to a He-Man movie nowadays, that's not something that if I was a studio head, I would be willing to write a check for necessarily.
Yeah, though I understand it in the way of you want a franchise, you want fantasy-ish, and God knows nobody wants to create something. So many of these studios and fuck Amazon... Especially, their IP farm. They want an IP, the frickin' F word. They want a franchise. They're putting the cart before the horse. Though I gotta say, we've had various iterations of He-Man, just haven't had a movie. You know, Netflix has had multiple series. She-Ra had some stuff come out. So there's been life in this IP, but it's not been in this form.
Netflix was going to be the studio behind this at one.
They were.
Yeah, they did have the rights.
They backed out in July 2023.
Thanks, Kevin Smith.
Well, I went nose deep since we announced that we were doing this series of two films.
Did you say nose deep as a reference to Joel Silver?
No. I went nose deep into this whole IP. I went into all the cartoons. I watched all of He-Man, all of She-Ra. Then I watched the 2002 He-Man Revelation cartoon, and I watched the Kevin Smith version. And you know what? I gotta say, man, I hate to say it, but that Kevin Smith version of this series, I'm only through the first season. I know I have one other season to go, but they actually handled this pretty damn well. Adam, I'm sure you watched that, right?
I watched it. I was angered because everything that he denied in the press was exactly what happened in the first two episodes. However, I thought it was pretty well done. I liked it, except for the casting. I understand he's got a frickin' boner for his CW shows that he directed, but I can't stand the dude that they got for He-Man, and I think the casting could have been better. But when you get, except for Mark Hamill, which is, even though all he was doing was pulling off his Joker, it's Mark Hamill. But when you get to Scareglow, oh my God, that was just amazing. It's kind of what X-Men 97 did when they got the Black Queen in that season last year, or I guess 2 years ago now. So Revelation's a dang good time. And yeah, you only got 5 episodes for the second part, and you'll get through it in a hurry, but I think you'll be satisfied.
I was impressed, I gotta say. I did watch it when on its initial run, but I only watched maybe 2-3 episodes, and I don't think my heart was really in it. This time it really was, and I enjoyed what I saw. Okay, so Matt, you mentioned Jared Leto. Let's talk about the marketing for this. You are absolutely right. Jared Leto was nowhere to be seen in the press for this. They tried so hard to hide the fact that he was in this. If you look at the marketing, he's not in a cast list at all. You know, there have been a couple stories that have been out about that. One is the fact that he was not happy with the end result and refused to do press for it. But the other thing that has come out, and the thing I actually kind of believe, is the fact that Amazon told him, stay the fuck out of the press. Don't go anywhere near. And they've had everybody from Nicholas Gallatson to Camila Mendez. Every single time I opened up my YouTube, Gallatson and Mendez were on some kind of fucking YouTube show, tasting food, tasting figures from this. I'm sure if I had called and asked for an interview for Perkley and Media Presents, they would have probably done that. Alison Brie did all the late night shows. She was on Kimmel. She was on The Tonight Show. But Jared Leto was nowhere to be found. Matt, what do you say? Do you think that was planned?
It's just so tough because there's so much between the stories that you hear about him. I'm not talking about the method acting nonsense. He's been accused of some pretty, let's call it misconduct. And of course, there's no proof of them. There's purely speculation. But you combine that with the fact that his streak lately is about as brown as you can find. Ever since Suicide Squad, which made a shitload of money, but not a lot of people defend his take on the Joker. Find me the role where you can honestly say Jared Leto made that movie. I get since 10 years ago, but you look at Blade Runner 2049, he's the worst part of that movie, aside from the fact I couldn't feel my back after getting out of the chair. House of Gucci, I don't know what he was thinking. Morbius, Haunted Mansion, Tron Ares, and now this. He clearly does not have a draw in the way that people will go see a movie because he's in it. So maybe the studios are thinking the antithesis of, well, let's just pretend he's not in the movie. To which my response is, why are you casting him in the first place? Especially because this, he came to the studio and expressed interest in playing Skeletor. And I'm not going to say he like forced their hand, but this was something that was, I guess, a passion for him. But much like Haunted Mansion, which he did no press for that, his role in that as the villain is purely motion capture and his voice is synthesized, so you can't tell it's him. I don't understand why, much like a lot of stuff Jared Leto does, I don't understand it. And I don't want to understand it. I'm sorry, we talked about this in Suicide Squad. The guy from Dallas Buyers Club and My So-Called Life, that feels like a lifetime ago. I know the second one literally is, but I remember seeing Dallas Buyers Club and going, wow, I can't wait to see what he does next.
And he has taken nothing but paycheck roles since. It's pretty insane. All right, Adam, as somebody, he was in one of your favorite franchises, which we'll eventually get to, Tron, last year, and that completely sunk. What did you think when you saw, oh, Jared Leto's not out doing press for this?
I can't say that I was surprised. I don't have the instant Leto hate that others do, solely because I haven't looked up anything about it. Mm-hmm. So I haven't read the allegation. I won't go down that road. However, I do find it utterly hypocritical that the same people that defend Johnny Depp blash Jared Leto. So y'all can go fuck yourselves, because neither one of them are going to fuck you, ladies or gents. So I can't say I'm surprised, because I know that he's persona non grata, but I do think that put them in a hard spot, because who are you going to get to market this movie? And then again, who's watching Jimmy Kimmel to figure out what you're going to go watch, or Jimmy Fallon, or anything else? Who's watching late night talk shows anymore? That stuff is as played out as some of the IPs that they're trying to get. So I don't understand. And I'm going to say, and I'll get into it when we get into the film, the one person that I did see out and about is the worst possible casting they did in this movie, and that's the person that I got to see front and center selling this thing, and I was blown away. I'm confused, but at the other end, it's Amazon, and I don't think they care if they're going to blow money. I really don't.
Well, another way they tried selling this, did they take this to Taco Bell? Did they take this to McDonald's? Did they try getting any Happy Meals? Oh, no.
Denny's was the big one.
They didn't take it to any of those things that, you know, kids go to. They took it to Denny's, which on a weekend you'll see retired people at the Denny's. You can get a He-Man burger, which after this movie was over.
Yes, yeah.
I insisted.
No, you did not.
I did. I insisted. I said, Jen, we got to go to Denny's. I got to have that He-Man burger. She has a picture of me And I might post it with this article of me sitting there with this fucking He-Man burger. My God, it's a fucking bellyache just waiting to happen. And yeah, that did happen after I was done with this monster of meat.
Did you send your cardiologist a middle finger? Like, that's basically what you're doing. Because, like, you of all people should not be eating that.
I know.
For all intents and purposes, the Denny's thing made me laugh. Because do you remember the last movie that had a big Denny's marketing campaign?
Stop. What was it, Independence Day?
Fantastic Four 2015.
Fantastic Four.
And that worked so well for that movie.
Yeah.
But you know what's funny? This is, I mean, there's got to be a shift. Because The Mandalorian and Grogu, just 2 weeks before this, right? Disney's and Star Wars' big summer hit. They went to Burger King? Wait, Burger King? Aren't they like fourth now in fast food burger franchise? I mean.
Yeah.
Well, they're a distant third at best.
Mm-hmm. And let's remember, actually, think about that. This movie kicked Star Wars off of IMAX screens a week early because they were so excited to get this out and get IMAX 1 weekend before they were supposed to. Mm-hmm. Way to go, AMC.
Always thinking.
Well, has Amazon ever made a movie that's like made a profit?
Hail Mary. Project Hail Mary. They did that one.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about theatrical. I had to see this opening weekend, boys. I had to. We went the first Sunday it was out, me and Jen did. She was just as excited to see it. Well, maybe not as excited as me, but she was really looking forward to it. And we had a pretty crowded theater. I would say it was about 3/4 full. We went to the IMAX. I went all out with this. Matt, did you go opening weekend?
Out of necessity, because I was worried this thing was going to be pulled out faster than most people on their first date. But it was a surprisingly full theater, which was a surprise for me. And for all intents and purposes, very respectful theater. So for that, I am most grateful.
Yeah, same here. I believe it or not, I had mostly people around my age in that theater. There weren't too many kids.
Oh, gee, I'm so surprised.
There weren't too many kids in that particular theater. And the kids that were there looked like they were pretty much dragged. Adam, how was your theatrical experience, sir?
Well, I didn't get to see it opening weekend because not only did I have a graduating high school senior, but she had also earned her Eagle rank. So the weekend this came out, I was planning an Eagle Court of Honor, and then I had to deal with graduation, and then I had to deal with senior trip and prom and everything that went along with it.
Wow.
So thank goodness I got out after the second, like the Monday after the second weekend, because I think if I had waited another 72 hours, I might have been having to drive to some dirt mall theater in the middle of nowhere to see this thing. When I bought my tickets, and y'all can validate this, and you know, the guy said, I'd love sending the guy screenshots, it was going to be a private screening. I don't mind that, no big deal. And it was in my AMC XL, which is what they're now calling some of their giant screens, because I don't know, because Disney's pissed about IMAX come this December. So I went to the IMAX XL, and it was solo. And then when I walk in, some douche nugget bought a seat for him and his kid, two seats over from me. in like the third largest theater. They have IMAX, they have Dolby, and then they have this. And this freaking just, my God, man. Now, by the time it started, thank goodness about another dozen people rolled in, because I had to go out and talk to the manager twice before, not because of this guy, but because the curtains kept moving during the trailers. They were scrolling in, scrolling out, scrolling in, scrolling out, where all the, 30 minutes of trailers and commercials, and they're projecting on the screens and they keep changing sizings. And I'm like, I go out and I tell him, I go, dude, if this movie starts and this isn't set up for a screen, I'm going to be pissed. I'm giving you time to fix this. Thank goodness it did. Normally I'm not a dick, but I knew that I was not going to have another chance to see this. My life had changed around so much. I'd worked overtime, my shifts had changed. Thank God I have AMC and I can switch my stuff around willy-nilly. I made 11 different reservations before I finally saw this movie. But I got it in. Large bucket of popcorn, got my icy. I did not get my Castle Grayskull bucket, but damn, that is the best popcorn bucket I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I wanted that bucket so bad.
Especially because one of the castle turrets also held the drink. That's just sweet. I did see one person with a Skeletor popcorn bucket, and I'm sorry, I could not sit with a Skeletor head in my lap throughout this movie. much to Leto's chagrin, possibly, but I was not putting that head in my lap.
Why not? How many people have dated Nicole Richie and done things like that?
All right, well then, let's dive right into Masters of the Universe. So after a few movie logos, which I know Matt loves so much.
This movie's already 220, for God's sake. Do I need this?
We're hearing this himbo, who will eventually come to know as Adam, talk about Eternia and dragons and Castle Grayskull, and he swears that he's not high. He then says that Eternia is located in the beating heart of the cosmics, and Grayskull is located at the heart of the heart of the heart, which is the power of Grayskull, and it harnesses the power of a god. And all this power is located in the Sword of Power. Okay, right away, we know they're not taking this very seriously.
They're not, but I think it's important to set a tone for a movie right away. We're going to discuss this later on, but with, you know what, we got a couple years. People will forget this. I don't like Guardians of the Galaxy. However, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, I think, tells you what that movie is in the first 5 minutes of it. This movie has that same type of thing. It tells you what this movie is as you enter it, and I think that's important. I think it decides that it's going to tell the audience, hey, you know what, we're going to be fun.
Now, Matt, as somebody coming in, as we mentioned during the Masters of the Universe 1987 podcast, you are pretty green when it comes to Masters of the Universe and He-Man. You're getting a little bit of it explained here, right?
I mean, I'm so green, I might as well be living in a Louisiana swamp with a banjo. But they said the word power so much in this opening, I half expected Verizon to come in and start putting up poles in the theater, because I guess they couldn't come up with any synonyms for power, or the Sword of Power is trademarked and that's why they keep saying it. But yes, they establish a tone right away. Do they carry the tone throughout the entire movie? That remains to be seen. But it's about what I expected, for better or worse. I kind of went in expecting to be out of it, like because I freely admit this is not my franchise, this is not my purview, so I wanted to cut it as much slack as I could, but it's not setting me off at a good note between the overuse of the word power, and I think there, to Adam's point about Guardians, there's a lot of MCU qualities in this movie. Some of it, the better parts of the MCU, some other parts, not as much.
Okay, well, you mentioned the fact that you don't know if they know a synonym for power in this. Don't forget who's telling this. This is done by Nicholas Galitzine's Adam, who we're going to establish pretty quick that he's a fucking himbo, right?
Yes, I am.
I mean, that's who we're dealing with here. So we hear that a hero will wield the sword. Until that day, it is located in the castle under the watchful eye of the sorceress, who's a little scary but cool, as he says. He says that he sees his heroes as strong and fearless, and this is when we meet Adam as a child. And here's something I noticed about this film. Much like Barbie tackled what it is like living as a girl in the 21st century, Masters of the Universe is going to tackle what it is like living as a man, with all the toxic masculinity and self-righteous attitude that boys have to deal with as they grow up. How successful that is, we'll talk about, but Adam, do you agree that this is what this movie's about?
I can't say necessarily it's what it's about, but I do think it is trying to put that in there. And I think it shoehorns it in about as well as fisting jokes.
I mean, there's so much homoeroticism in this movie that I half expected some fisting.
But I got to say, before they show us young Adam, by the way, I can't help but smile every time. Sorry, everybody. I got no problem wearing my coral colored shirts as well. Yeah, they're pink salmon. But the flyover of Eternia and the initial look we get at this planet, I think is pretty sweet.
I do too.
Like, I dig it. I think it at least is just like, we see more of Eternia than we saw in 1987.
For sure.
Well, it's got twice the runway, basically.
Yeah. Adam says that he's going to hang out and play with Cringer instead of going to arms training, but his mom is having none of it. And this is when we meet Man-at-Arms, played by a very enthusiastic Idris Elba. Guys, we have talked a lot about how Idris has had a lot of work here in the States, and they really haven't been able to use him that well. Hell, we just talked about him with Dark Tower couple months ago. I see Elba tackling this role and having fun with it, and they will give him an arc that I wasn't expecting. How do we feel about Idris Elba, aka Man-at-Arms?
I kind of felt like this was just copy and pasting Heimdall, where he gets moments, but I don't think he leaves a lasting impression like he should. Although at least in this movie, they didn't just make him the doorkeeper. They actually gave him stuff to do, but Idris Elba's always good. I've never seen him like phone it in or be terrible in a movie, but I also have no frame of reference for this character, so much like everyone in this movie, I'm comparing to the canon film for whatever that's worth.
All right, Adam, as somebody who did grow up with the cartoons as I did, how do you feel Idris Elba did here as Man-at-Arms?
20 minutes into this movie, I want a Idris Elba Man-at-Arms movie more than I want the rest of Masters of the Universe. I think he's enjoying what he's doing. I think that gets lost a little bit later, but especially here in these opening 20 minutes, which, I mean, this is a long establishing opening part, by the way, I gotta say. And I'm gonna complain about this as long more times than Mechanic, but Idris Elba seems to know what this movie is, and he seems to know that he's going to be here and have fun. He feels like us playing with toys, and he's like, and I get to be Man-at-Arms? Oi, let's do it! I mean, he fits the role so well. He's got that freaking porn star stash that he's got showing up. I don't know. He embodies it. I feel like he's having fun, and I feel like he's here because he wants to. And it's amazing that, yes, he must have the worst fucking agent in Hollywood for being such a talented actor to get such crap thrown his way. But thank God he's in this movie.
You know, a lot of the people in this cast, because, guys, believe it or not, I watched a lot of those videos that I was mentioning earlier. A lot of those YouTube videos with Gallatin, with Mendez, with Brie. I believe Allison Brie when she says that she played with He-Man figures when she was a child, because she's nearing 40, I think. She's right near 40.
She married a man that probably still plays with them.
Yeah, no shit. The other two, you guys weren't even born when that fucking franchise was out. However, I believe Man-at-Arms when he says, I did it because I was a fan. And he has been in the press saying that exact thing. And I find that passion here. Adam, do you?
I do. It kind of comes across in everything that he does. He's believable. I think everybody else is playing the roles they're given. I think Idris Elba is Man-at-Arms. I absolutely dig it.
So Man-at-Arms, as we know him here at Duncan, starts saying that their entire lives are built on the backs of men and women who have won the fight. And this isn't about a participation trophy society. He's also...
Okay. I hate this in fantasy when they put in modern lingo. Drives me crazy.
He's also saved a lot of asses and fought for them, so they're going to fight for him. Then he starts bopping people with a stick, and he calls out Tila and says that their arms are an extension of them. Adam gets pushed around by a girl, and Duncan says, just do what you can. And then we meet King Randor, who appears and asks Duncan how they're doing, and he questions whether all of them are a fine bunch, and Duncan says he will turn Adam into a fighter. Randor, who, by the way, when I heard Dolph Lundgren, who also did press for this, weirdly, was in this. Adam, was I the only one who thought he was going to play Randor?
How do you have him do anything other than be King Randor? Because this dude is bad.
Yeah, he's not good.
And later on, he has a scene, and I feel like Princess Bride, where were we? Oh, that's right. We were back in the swamps of sadness. Adam, let me tell you what you need to be doing. This dude is just a horrible, horrible person in this role. But yes, to answer your question, like
he looks like he should be like a truck stop driver. Like, I didn't realize there was a gas station in Eternia.
But to answer your question, yes, there's no reason that you don't get Dolph and have him do this. I do think the reason they got Dolph to do the press, for those that don't know, the last 2.5 to 3 years, he very privately went through some very harrowing cancer struggles, almost lost his life, almost took his own. Those of you that know, I love listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. It's a very passionate discussion. And I think him coming back and starting to do things again, that would have been just amazing. But I think he was happy to be out on the circuit talking about this film. But God, I don't know how you screw that up and not have him be Randor.
Randor then beats the shit out of Adam, just completely comes at him. Like, what's he learning with this?
He says talked that, about my childhood.
He says that the world is no place for the weak and makes him repeat it.
Yeah, when did this turn into Conan?
Yeah, well, it was always based on Conan, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, I know. It's very... Yeah. I mean, the crux of the story, it's basically the first Conan movie, minus the, like, going to Earth and, you know, because this one's very much, for me, it's like Conan mixed with the canon movie, just updated. Like, they removed all the supporting characters that are on Earth and just got around that by making Adam the principal character on Earth. Not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing, but between his father and being usurped by another, like, conqueror, it's very Conan-coded.
Very much so, which is He-Man. They wanted that license to make toys. They couldn't get it, so they pivoted. Mm-hmm. Wanted Turok, couldn't get it, so they pivoted. But yeah, it's very much Conan mixed with Thor.
Duncan tells Adam that this is his place to stand tall and remain tall so that his father can see him when he turns around, which he never does.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Teela watches Adam walk away as Duncan proclaims the show over. Teela then catches up with Adam, even though he came to be alone. She says that she doesn't think Adam's weak, even if his father says so. And they then notice that the sorceress is in Grayskull as she's looking at Eternia getting attacked.
Hey, here's the reason you could get Adam to go see this movie. Miranda Baccarin.
Yeah, you know, I just saw her in an episode of How I Met Your Mother the other day.
She's crazy eyes. Yes, she is. And her husband's got a documentary about crypto that's been out and about right now. Garrett, he was in the OC, so I'm sure you're a fan.
I am.
Yeah. He's Commissioner Gordon to Matt and I, but yes.
So this is when we get a huge battle as ships are attacking, guns are going off as Ram Man does some ramming, Fisto does some fisting. Love seeing him punch this dude into the ether. That was pretty awesome. And then Duncan tells Teela everything is going to be all right. And then we're seeing Duncan be a total badass and take out some guards until he gets face to face with Trapjaw. Straight from the cartoon this character is, and it's a hell of a battle. A fight that Duncan loses. So I find this interesting, you know, after having his head held high and telling Adam, life is not about having a participation trophy, all that, here he gets his ass handed to him, and I think that kind of humbles him, which we'll see.
Yeah, I think that's exactly, I mean, he's given an arc more than almost anybody else in this film, yeah. Duncan. Wait, speaking of Duncan, Dunkin' Donuts, how did you do Krispy Kreme and not Dunkin' Donuts?
That's right, they did Krispy Kreme as well.
God, Amazon sucks. It's one. This fight is toyetic. This is punchy, punchy, smashy, smashy. This is me and you playing with our toys back mm-hmm. when we're 8 years old. The toys look like the figure. Sorry, the characters look like the toys. I can't believe how accurate Trapjaw looks to that character. I never thought that you'd get something that looks that way. But even this fight, the battle is crazy as it is, I can follow it, and I think it looks pretty good.
I agree, but I thought I had seen the scenes that Man-at-Arms was in the lead up to this. Adam, did you think they would kill him?
I didn't until what happened, till he gets shot in the chest. Mm-hmm. Now, there's been, in the last couple of years, there's been a lot of fake scenes put into trailers. Some because they haven't been done editing yet, some on purpose. Based on the way that they kind of bait and switched with Masters of the Universe on Netflix, the Revelation Revolution, I thought it was possible they were going to do it and we were going to get Woman at Arms. I thought it was absolutely possible.
I found the CG in this movie to be really inconsistent. This opening looked like something that I could have seen animated in a college workshop. I thought it was pretty amateurish, to be perfectly blunt. And yeah, it's toyetic, and I get that's what they're going for, but I'm not sucked in. I still feel like I'm still at an arm's distance, man at arm's distance for this entire, I'd say the first third. Like, I was just watching it going, I feel really old.
Oh, God. How do you think me and Adam feel watching this thing? I liked seeing Trapjaw changing weaponry. I thought that was cool. I liked seeing these two just completely go at it. And I liked seeing Teela witness all of it. It's tough seeing your dad in a weakened state after being so strong for so many years. So this was this played pretty well for me, too. So Teela tends to Duncan, who tells her that he has failed as she picks him up and they get out before the palace explodes. And here is when we have the grand entrance of Skeletor and his cronies. Skeletor being played by a very hidden, both in the CGI and in the press materials, Jared Leto. Okay, the elephant in the room is this controversial actor who honestly, since winning his Oscar, has taken one paycheck role after another, as we mentioned, and having each movie he's in lose money, including this one. In fact, all he's getting in return is more allegations thrown his way. So, honestly, I'm not sure what I believe when it comes to Leto. What I do know, and God, I hate saying this, I love Jared Leto in this movie. I love his mannerisms. I love his voice. I love how he's sinister, yet also just as goofy as I remember Skeletor being. And I love the CGI job they did on his face. No matter what I have to say about this movie, I think Skeletor rocks.
Skeletor looks great. I like him about 75% of the time. With almost every scene and with almost every moment, they take things a little too far. And every scene needs to be cut shorter. Every script needed to be tightened down. The editor needs to be taken out back and stabbed with a sword of power because they didn't edit anything out of this film. I like him. I think he absolutely steals the scene as Skeletor should. But I also think everything just goes on a little too long when he's there. But he absolutely steals the show.
All right, let's go to the Jared Leto hater, Mr. Matthew Goudreau. How do you feel Leto is here, sir?
I'm a hater, but I'm also fair. Mm-hmm. So I will say, tip my cap and say he did a damn good job. But I will also throw this caveat in, because I'm me. If you were going to do this much to modulate his voice and all this, why are you casting him in the first place?
Yeah.
Yep.
I get, like, you know, he does the mocap, he's doing all that, but if you're doing that much to mask the performance, then clearly there's other actors who could do it just as well.
You know what's weird?
Not even mocap. That's him on set.
That is him in a blue suit,
bodysuit. That's a body stocking. Well, it's appropriate for Jared Leto. That's a body condom.
And yeah, he's wearing all the things on his face. Yeah, that he is on set. Alison Brie has been very upfront about that, saying that he was on set every day.
I think it was the right
incredible
choice
that they CGI. Replaced, incredible
that they replaced his head, because that was not the original plan. But I think it was one of the smartest things they did, was replace that head.
Correct.
Yeah, and it's got more expression than I thought it would. But it reminds me a lot of Tom Hardy's Bane, where I like the performance, but I think it's a bit too exaggerated. I know it's a fucking He-Man movie, but I'm surprised they went with a more like baritone type of Skeletor versus the more high-pitched Cobra Commander type of Skeletor, which I would have been perfectly okay with. So this surprised me. But to Adam's point, I think this is my biggest issue with the movie. Did Taika Waititi ghost direct this? Because it's the same problem I have with his Thor movies, which we'll talk about. I mean, there's a lot of Ragnarok in this, to be fair, but it's the thing of every scene, instead of saying cut, it's, hey, end on a joke. Regardless of whether or not it lands, everything has a punchline, everything has a half-second beat that goes on too long. Clearly, nobody in the editing room was awake or cared enough, because there is no excuse for this to be 220. And I'm not talking about Nicholas Galitzine and his chiseled body.
Let me ask you, would you have taken a movie about this character serious?
I think there's a way, like, serious in the sense of trying, because, like, Barbie makes a statement, and it's very jokey and clearly not in reality, much like this. But I think that succeeds better at delivering commentary and a statement than this does. The example I would use, I think this could have worked in the way like Transformers 1 did, where they put characterization first and foremost, enough to where I bought the stakes. If you remember that movie, there's a part where it kind of matures in its storytelling with a certain reveal. Go back to that show and we talk about it more extensively, because I don't want to spoil it for Adam. And I feel like this movie never gets the opportunity to have that type of shift.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could do that level of impactful storytelling while still having some fun, some goofy, cartoony times.
Alison Brie did say that the reason Jared Leto's voice is the way it is because he was trying to do a voice where it seemed like he had an absence of lips, like Skeletor has. So that's why it came out the way it does. But I, the voice worked for me. I never looked at this character and thought Jared Leto, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, but you also have to wonder that. Again, why are you casting it in the first place?
Yeah, it could have been anybody.
Yeah.
Adam is let out by his mom as Randor takes out some guards, including Kurg, from that Masters of the Universe movie we reviewed last week. Adam, did you catch him?
I did. Absolutely did.
That was awesome. And then Skeletor cuts off Randor's head, that of the statue, as he says, his crown will cost you. And this is when we see the entrance of Evil Lynn. Okay, so I've had some pretty big praise for this cast. We'll get to the heroes here in a bit. I absolutely love Alison Brie. I thought she was great on Glow. I thought she was great on Mad Men. Wonderful on Community. And for what Leto isn't doing in the press, she has done Full Throttle. She's been doing most of it. And she comes off as hugely likable in each of the press materials. And you can tell this chick worked hard for this part. She studied the cartoon. She studied Meg Foster from last week's movie. All that being said, I'm not a huge fan of her Evil Lynn. It's not her performance. I think it's the fact that besides one thing they give her to do later, she's just kind of a nothing role.
You're nicer than I am. She's horrible in this.
Wow.
I mean, and I'm not being dramatic. This is horrible. I don't think she's good. I don't think she looks good. That blonde wig just sucks. It doesn't look like Evil Lynn. She looks confused when she's delivering lines. I get that she wanted to be here. I don't think she knows where she is half the time. I mean, she's bad in this. She makes Morena look good. And Morena's not a good actress, but she's smoking hot. But no. I love Alison Brie in so many things, and I was looking forward to her, but god dang, this is a bad performance.
Interesting. Matt, be the tiebreaker.
I just feel like she's one of those actresses, the moment she got on set with the green screen and all those type of fantastical elements, she didn't know what to do. I think she sticks out like a sore thumb. I'm more aligned with Adam. I think she's kind of the standout in the bat in a negative way. And another thing, this part's not her fault. She's not allowed to be bombastic enough. Maybe that's the point. She has to be a little more understated compared to Skeletor. But if that's the case, then why do you kind of tone down Skeletor to a degree to then keep her at kind of like an even keel through most of it? If you were going to do that, have her be like the straight man and completely monotone. And you could have actually mined some humor out of that. But I don't feel like she gels with everyone else.
I feel like she is only here to fight Teela in the third act. And for a post-credit scene that we're never going to get a follow-up to.
Oh, according to Travis Knight, it will.
This show.
According to Travis Knight, it might happen. We'll see. Evil Lyn proclaims Skeletor's conquest poetry as he just cackles away and then raises his arm and looks around saying, "That's it. It's the crescendo." Fun stuff. The sorceress, meanwhile, tells Adam to grab the sword, and his mom tells the sorceress to take the sword somewhere safe. The sorceress opens the portal, Matt's favorite thing, as his mom tells Adam to not forget where he came from.
It's not in the sky. It's okay with me.
Okay. When Skeletor approaches, she says, "Don't you dare get any closer." He hits her with a bolt from his staff, and the sorceress sends Adam on his way through the portal. Adam goes through, and wouldn't you know it, he lets go of the sword. But to be honest, I'm not sure even Arnold Schwarzenegger could have held that sword as he falls into some water.
Yeah, no, it was great. I saw the exact same thing in the first Thor movie.
Oh, okay.
Like, this is Thor being sent to Earth and the hammer being sent elsewhere. Like, there is so much of that first Thor in this.
And this is when we notice that this isn't just a retelling for retelling's sake. This is Adam trying to impress a chick on a date. And Adam, did you catch her name?
No.
Julie. Courtney Cox's character's name.
All right, that's cute.
And I like that this is something that's different, where it's not this huge secret that he needs to keep. He's just going to tell this story, even if no one in their right mind believes him.
Yeah, but I feel like this movie does the thing that I feel like happened to Hulk in the Marvel movies, where they just made him a joke.
Well, he's a joke anyway.
Yeah, but you can argue the same, like, they kind of did the same thing to Thor. I feel like I've just seen this before, and this is purely subjective. Mm-hmm. I don't find a lot of his stuff to be all that funny.
I laugh quite a bit during this, actually. I'll freely admit that.
I laughed at a lot of Skeletor stuff, which surprised me,
mm-hmm.
but most of the Adam and He-Man stuff I thought fell pretty flat. And look, I don't think Noah Centineo would have been good when he was cast.
Yeah.
I don't think Gatlin Zane is all that great.
Okay, well, let's
He's pretty to look at, don't get me wrong. I mean, I had the power in my pants, I'm not going to lie. But I don't think he has that, like, it factor that Hemsworth did in the first Thor movie.
All right, so let's get to him. So this is when we get our first full glimpse of our soon-to-be He-Man, played by Nicholas Gallatin. Guys, I will freely admit that I had no idea who this guy was. Jen had to explain that he comes from rom-coms. He was in Bottoms,
did you ever see Bottoms?
I did, yeah. That would be the one thing.
He was the captain of that. He's funny in that, but mm-hmm. doesn't even look like him nowadays.
Yeah. I guess they went with not an Arnold type, but a guy who can deliver lines. And you know what? I went with him. I'm not sure I buy him as an almighty god, but you can tell he worked hard. And his Adam/He-Man was just what this movie needed, I thought.
I felt like they could have used a couple more takes.
Interesting. All right, Adam, be this tiebreaker.
I think he's fine. You know, the issue is he's not Arnold as Conan. He's not even Dolph Lundgren as He-Man. There's not an imposing steal-the-show character that he just portrays. He's fine. He does a C-average job. You know, he does what he needs to, but he doesn't, you know, you knew that you were seeing Dolph Lundgren as He-Man. In here, you know that you're seeing He-Man, and you're like, who is he? I don't know. You know, I hear he's great in The Sheep Detectives, and I'm still making a point that I got to see that movie, but I don't see this being a star-making turn. He's fine.
And that's the thing. He's not a macho dude. He's in these comedies. You get this guy, you work him out for a year and a half, and you put him in this, and I think for what they got him for, I think he's fine.
Yeah, but that was like the textbook thing of, like, what was Chris Pratt doing before Guardians of the Galaxy? Like, it's kind of like a studio note of, we got to get these comedians and just have them do nothing but devour chickens and raw testosterone for 3 months and say, all right, you're our guy.
The date then verifies that he says Skeletor. And when he says yes, she grabs her phone and says that she has to take this. When he points out that it didn't ring, she just says, I need to take this and leave. Oh, God knows I've had blind dates that end like this.
God, fuck, you beat me to it. Sorry. I've got many attacks from Garrett after these dates.
And, of course, he's using Coca-Cola to show how the sword is just a vessel of power. So there's another product placement.
Yeah, I wanted that woman with the bell to come out. Shame.
We then go to Adam's apartment as his roommate is watching rom-coms and getting teary-eyed, again commenting on masculinity and what it means being a man, as he asks if Adam went on about the sword and home planet again.
Was a He-Man movie the appropriate place to do this type of commentary?
Was a Barbie movie the appropriate place to do that kind of commentary?
I would say yes, because I think Barbie has much more of a, like, identity in pop culture and reflects a lot more of, like, contemporary society than this does.
Because when I watched that cartoon, one thing that was made very clear is the fact that the way He-Man gets out of situations is he punches things. That's literally the only way. He doesn't use his brain in any of that. And I think Gallatin portrays that very well. Everybody else figures it out. But here he's learning. Hell, he's going to be introduced as a fucking human resources person. And you know my fucking fiance was all over that. He is in a position of getting out of situations by negotiating, by talking. And he's not in here to punch things. So I do think this is the appropriate place because He-Man, when you look at those figures, it just portrays them as big, muscular dudes, and this is how you're supposed to be. And this movie's trying to comment on that as successfully. Well, according to Matt, it isn't. But
yeah, well, I think the issue also is, I think we've gotten too far into, this is kind of a commentary on modern movies, where everything needs to have a message. Like, God forbid we have a movie that just comes out and is designed to entertain you nowadays.
Oh, I think
I hate to sound like old man yells at cloud, but, like, for God's sakes, what was, like, the last, like, dumb, like, I like Mortal Kombat 2. It's stupid. It has no commentary about it. It was just dumb people punching each other for 90 minutes. And you know what? I want more stuff like that in my blockbusters.
Yeah, but when those types of movies come out, you say, why didn't it say something? Like, there's a middle ground.
If it does the dumb stuff well, which there's an art to, you can make art out of garbage. It can be done. And I think this could have been really fine-tuned, certainly. I just don't think... I think the fact that this was written by four different people shows.
That I will agree with you. We see Adam go to his room as a drawing of Ram Man falls off his wall, and we see a flashback to Adam being made fun of for saying Ram Man is historical. Thumbs through some more drawings before coming across a family drawing. He wakes up with The Cure playing and then starts getting ready for work. And of course, his car won't start.
And this is not a guy who would be listening to The Cure.
No, I agree with you there.
He should have been listening to 30 Seconds to Mars.
Google it if you don't understand that.
Yeah. He makes his way into his human resources job, and of course, as I mentioned, Jen was really giddy at this, considering that she's also in human resources. My question is, you need a degree to be in human resources, so where and how did he go to college?
Eternia Online University. I have the diploma.
We then cut to him working out in a baggy kitten sweater as we get the cameo that I honestly wasn't expecting. Even after seeing Dolph in a lot of the press materials, I thought he was just coming out to support the film. And if anything, he was going to be King Randor, as I mentioned. But here he is, working out as Dolph says that he's in his spot. Adam asks for some words of advice and wisdom for the new guy, and Dolph just says he needs to get behind himself. The front is a facade, and if you back yourself, there's nothing you can't achieve. He then says that's all he gets before raising his hand and saying, good journey. Again, I like this cameo.
I liked it at first. I mean, again, I'm like, I think his cameo is twice as long as it needs to be for how it is, because he kind of says the same thing three times. But yeah, make it your own, do your own thing. It's almost like it's just like, all right, man, we got... You know, say it again. Okay, we're going to put all of it in there. It's a good cameo. Obviously, the gym fits because it's freaking Dolph. You knew the people in my theater, all 12 of us who had seen Masters of the Universe, because 10 of the 12 of us kind of pumped our fists in the air when the scene came up. And then at the end, when he said, good journey, as much as Matt wanted to throw his Coke at the screen, we all kind of just went, yay!
Well, I forgot that was even said in the last movie, because for the 20 people in my theater, clearly none of them remembered that, because there was no, like, applause or anything of that sort. It's kind of the best and the worst of, like, the Stan Lee cameos, where I thought this was a clever insertion, And I like the Stanley cameos best when he doesn't talk or when he didn't speak. That's kind of how I felt about this. Like, I wish it was just like one line, wink and a nod. I felt like, much like everything else in this movie, it went on too long. I did laugh he was credited as Macho Man.
Yeah, I did too.
Mm-hmm.
Because all I could think of was Randy Savage,
yes.
God rest his soul, being in this movie. Because, like, could you imagine, like, if freaking Skeletor sounded like the Iron Sheik? You can't tell me you would not have gone to see that. Break your back, Duncan, make you humble.
Adam's then talked to by his boss, who says even though he's great at his job and he's been awesome sauce, as she says, people are starting to get creeped out about his investigating swords, as it's just not a good look for human resources. Adam gets a text that says, I found your sword, and when he takes the phone, it says the sword is yours for $300. He takes the phone, and his boss says that if he walks through that door, he can kiss this place goodbye consensually, which I actually... Me and Chan really laughed at that. So Adam walks into a comic store and starts eyeing everybody, thinking that they're the one who has a sword. And I love this dude in the hat that he approaches about it. The guy approaches him as he's taken to the sword on display. Adam eyes it as the guy says that this is as far as I can take you, as he backs into some merchandise. Adam then grabs a sword, and we think this is going to be the Mjolnir, right? As he tries taking it out, but of course he just gets stuck as the statue just kind of falls on him. The worker tells him to get off the floor and stop ravishing the pillager. He says the sword isn't for sale as he takes it out and wields it. He says by the power of Grayskull, and nothing happens. He just keeps raising the sword and saying different words as he rushes out, and the girl asks if he's single.
Okay, I do have to give the writing one compliment on a structural level. I'm glad he doesn't have amnesia or is completely oblivious, like they didn't wipe his memory when he went through the portal, because Lord knows we've seen that kind of story in fantasy. So you kind of can avoid some of the fish out of water humor. But be that as it may, this guy gets picked on way too much, given how good looking he is in this movie. Like, for a movie all about toxic masculinity, nobody would give this guy any amount of shit unless he looked like, well, if he looked like Jared Leto now.
It was great. It was way too long. And it was one of those where I'm just like, just cut every freaking cut half as long. Like, even when you're making the jokes with Turok there, and it's just like, okay, it's a joke. But then you tell a second one and a third one, you're like, okay, comedy comes in threes, it's good. But you don't even stop there. You go four, five, six, and it's just, damn it, just hold back a little bit. You know, because it's funny, but then it stops being funny.
Adam takes off in his car as he arrives home with his sword of power. He goes in his room and looks at a drawing of his dad before he's woken up by a knock on the door. It's some cops who take him and the sword, and they start making fun of him, calling him Highlander and King Arthur.
Adam, yeah, because kids nowadays will totally understand who those people are.
who makes a Highlander joke? That's for us old men in the audience.
Yes, you made the Highlander joke before the new Highlander movie has actually come out.
Guys, you realize who's doing the music of this, right? It is Daniel Pemberton and Brian May. Yep.
The guy from The Queen?
Yes.
Yeah.
The Queen, Brian May. Yep. So that's where
He was making Flash Gordon? Did they just tell him this was a Flash Gordon movie? He looked at it, he said, oh, I loved it.
No, because what they did is they ripped off the instrumental theme for Neverending Story. That's the theme that's playing throughout this.
The band The Darkness, I know, did a song for
this. They did the credit song. I don't know where they dug them out of.
So. The literal darkness.
Adam takes
a little thing called love.
Electric Bill.
Adam takes a look at a guy in a car listening to what? I Got the Power as traffic is stopped. I'm sorry, these jokes are playing for me. We then hear What's Up playing, which, by the way, is a song I don't like. And what is up with this song all of a sudden being everywhere? I don't get. We then see Beast Man enter the fray, a little updated from his previous incarnation of Orange Fur. Here he's jumping in cars, looking for Adam and the sword. He rips the door off the cop car as Adam uses the sword to get out and run. Beast Man hops his way and corners him before lashing Adam and kicking him into the street. And this is when Teela shows up. And here's when we meet the adult Teela, played by Camila Mendez. And guys, here's another actress. I had no idea who this chick is. I didn't watch Rivendell. But again, I think she kind of worked for me. She was vulnerable when needed, and she could kick ass when she needed to. Adam, what'd you think of our Teela here?
Kept trying to figure out where I know her from, because she looks so familiar to me. So I look her up. I know her from nowhere. I've never seen this actress before, but I swear to goodness I have. But no, she's fine. She does a good job. You know, I'm glad to see Teela show up. I'm glad that she's capable. Good job.
I appreciate that they didn't take this character too far and make her the Kathleen Kennedy strong female character who has to undermine the male at every turn, but she's also not incompetent. I think they gave her a better service than they gave Lady Sif in the Thor movies. So I will praise them for that.
Yep. Agreed.
So Teela calls him a squink, and she asks if Adam's ready to go home, but Beastman isn't, as he once again attacks, and Teela pushes him down. They run through these empty streets.
It's like the canon. The canon movie at least had an excuse for not hiring extras because they had no money.
I know.
Where the fuck are all the people?
We'll find out what it is on the street here in a bit. As Beastman is on the hunt for the sword, which sent a signal when raised, apparently. He's flipping cars, and Adam says he had misplaced the sword. They make a run for it as they jump down a bridge, but Beastman is once again in front of them, only to be run over by what, guys? An Amazon truck.
Wah, wah, wah.
Big sigh after that from the whole theater.
That was like
collective groan.
Yeah.
That was the equivalent of like a dad joke busting through the wall like the Kool-Aid Man.
Yes.
It literally stopped the movie, and this is me talking. I let out a collective sigh. I spoke for everybody in that theater.
So they get to Teela's ship as she opens the doors and everyone looks on. Adam yells, "I told you guys this was real," as Beastman once again approaches. They get in the ship as Beastman falls down and they take off. So this is our time on Earth. And Adam, you know, you're saying everything in this movie is too long. Are you saying his time on Earth was too long, or did you think we got here in a pretty efficient time?
Nothing in this movie is efficient.
Hmm.
Nothing. However, I'm having a good time watching it. At the same time, I wish everything was edited to about 2/3 of whatever length they're giving me. Every single scene.
Man, I don't know. His abs look pretty efficient. I could probably cut bread on those.
We get some pretty colors in our face as Adam says that he can't believe it's her and that she's gotten so big and has aged well. She says that he hasn't changed at all and that it's been super bad since he left. She says Skeletor took their parents that night, and when Adam says that he can't wait to get home, she tells him to manage his expectations. We see that the place has been completely ravaged, and I love when Adam asks why he did it, and Teela just says he has a skull for her face. That is why I really dig this movie. They're not giving deep reasons for Skeletor being here. He is doing it because he's supposed to. He's evil, and I respected that.
Yeah, no, the stuff that they could be given reasons about, and a lot of other people would, they don't. The fact that the first sword that he comes across is, because I was positive that was a fake sword. Mm-hmm. It was a copy. Somebody had made it for the statue. There's no way any of us thought that first time was going to be the real sword. No, it is. How does Beastman get there? He just does. How does Teela just get there? She just does. Like, they are not interested in telling us the stuff that kind of doesn't matter. And I'm glad for that I don't have a 2 hour and 30 minute movie as opposed to the 2 hour and 20 minute movie I have. But yeah, things like that. It's just like, he's evil. He has a skull for a face. Because if you ask Skeletor, that's exactly what his answer was in the cartoon. I'm evil because I like to be evil.
He's been waiting all podcast.
Home Alone, everybody.
We see the cloak taken off Skeletor as he wakes up and takes his staff. Evil Lynn then says that the beast has returned and he has nothing but excuses for him. Skeletor isn't having any of it, though, as he holds him down, and Evil Lynn says that Teela's ship was reported as flying around earlier on, and Skeletor tells Evil Lynn to get him that sword. She says that he has already won, as he has a vast army, and he has her. I don't know, I thought her delivery that line was...
Yeah, I wish they were more... I wanted this to be more like Joker Harley Quinn, ironically. Not the one that's in the movie, because that one kind of gets it wrong, but she's clearly more competent than him, but he's so egotistical that he refuses to give her any credit.
We cut to Teela taking Adam to the Royal Guard, where Skeletor wouldn't dare look for them, as she says, and they start walking as Adam is just staring at everybody as they walk by, and he's, of course, holding the sword in his hands.
I want to know who actually thought it was decent to write the line, "They'll never look for us here." You might as well put that in the cartoon for a 5-year-old.
Yeah, that's like when people say, "I'm 2 weeks away from retirement." It never works.
Nope. Let's split up and search the house. I mean, that's just...
Well, that's the thing. Like, this kind of reminded me of, like, in some ways, it's the equivalent of, like, those Scooby-Doo movies that they made in the early aughts, the live-action ones, where clearly some people were big fans of it, but it's also supposed to be satirical and making fun of the source material. But this one, I think, kind of makes a similar mistake where they're very lackadaisical with not explaining some things, which I appreciate. And then other times, I think it's overly convoluted. Like everything with the sword, I think is way too overcomplicated for a movie of this scale.
Well, you're lucky because, yeah. All right, so Garrett, hang on. Give me 30 seconds. Go ahead. Matt, traditionally, that sword is two halves. And you only have the sword of power when you put the two halves together to create the sword. And Skeletor has half a sword, and He-Man has half a sword. And that, so they could have went that route, and it would have been so, so much worse. It's amazing that this does, you know, for a cartoon, it had lore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could have been.
I think it could have lore without being overly expository. Because I think there's a lot of Guardians of the Galaxy in this, too. In the first Guardians movie, there's a lot of stuff that just happens and you go with it. Like, they go into the head of a god, and there's a merchant dressed like Liberace. And the movie says, just go with it. They don't explain it. Here, they kind of pick and choose what they explain versus what they don't. And I think the movie would have been better served if they didn't feel the need to explain a lot of stuff and just let actions actually drive the story. Because I appreciate Skeletor. I was waiting for the backstory. I was waiting for him to be like He-Man's uncle or something like that. But I'm glad we got a villain who just likes being evil. I've missed that in my movie. We're back to the Maleficent days of, bitch, I'm just evil.
God, Garrett, can you imagine if they went down the route of Skeletor being Randor's?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Yep. Yeah.
Wait, have they actually done that?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. There's a version where Skeletor is Randor's brother, and he tried to take over, and Randor, that's why he's skeleton formed. And yep.
Oh, yeah.
So they did like full prequelitis, basically.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
All right. Well, I'm glad they left that out.
I was going to say, this movie could have been way worse than it is. And I give Knight and the writers credit for picking and choosing what they do include here, because we have people like Matt who's like, God, it's just too convoluted. Well, it could have been so much worse. And I think for what we get, I'm pretty entertained by it.
I mean, look, this is not as bad as like the worst of the Bay Transformers films, where it makes your head spin, but also it's the dumbest nonsense you've ever heard, so it feels antithetical. And there's nothing in here that's like, there's no overt racism, or at least that I'm aware of.
Tila tells Adam to let her do the talking as she reintroduces Adam to the group, and Fisto says that this isn't the son of the king, and he proves it by showing his HR ID. He then sees Ram Man, and he says he calls him that because he looks like a man who rams. And we also have Moss Man here, and people laugh as Adam names Fisto because he fists people. Here's what I really like about the writing here. These people, they do have these names. I had all these action figures, but they write it so that the reason why they're named this is because Adam's the one who named them as a child. I thought that was awesome.
I completely go with that reasoning behind it. If anybody listening to this has not, or any of my co-hosts has not, please watch the episode of The Toys That Made Us on Netflix and watch the He-Man episode, because when they discuss the creators of these toys, and they talk about how some late night beverages and let's call it tobacco influenced how they named some of these figures, it completely makes sense. So that they have this is absolutely fun. I absolutely laugh when they are willing to make the Fisto joke. I laugh once, I laugh twice. I'm not laughing the seventh time they tell a joke, though.
What about when Skeletor compliments the sword between his legs?
I love the innuendo in this movie. Made me laugh a lot because they are not hiding from the inherent homoeroticism of this property,
and I respect it for that. So they take the sword of power away from him as they say that they need a minute to talk. Adam gets locked in by the girl who used to put him in lockers, and the smell of urine leads Adam to Duncan, who is all about living in self-pity and alcohol after he let King Randor down by losing to Trapjaw. This, of course, is Man-at-Arms. He then sees the cleaning service robot, and Adam says that one of those boys could be worth 50 soldiers. Fisto picks up the sword of power, saying it's smaller than he expected. Tila tries ramming the door down, but knocks the door down. Tila then goes back to get Duncan up by throwing water on him, and Adam reminds him of who he is as Duncan throws up on him and calls him the son of Randor. So here we have hungover Idris Elba. Tila says they're going to have to carry him as they tell the service bot to do that. They make their way through the crowds as Skeletor makes his way in. Ram Man gives Adam the sword as the bot just drops Duncan.
Speaking of which, is this R2-D Eternia from the comics? are from the show.
Yes, but it's changed.
Yeah, the final reveal of what it is how he is in the original. We never see it develop like this.
But Roboto is a comic and cartoon character.
And I had that figure as a kid. You literally twist the legs and like the insides of a move like a robot. It was actually one of my favorite action figures as a kid.
Yeah. This L337 version was not the one that we had. This is Lando and L3 from Solo is what I get with these two the rest of the time. And I could not place the voice. It drove me nuts that I couldn't place it because I was trying to. But that's Kristen Wiig.
Yeah,
and
Kristen Wiig. Mm-hmm.
I like it. Yep, so you can guess how the interwebs loved having a black man at arms and a female Roboto.
Should have been Robota. Go on Reddit. I'm sure you can find that exact comment somewhere on He-Man thread.
That's killing me, this podcast. Bolts come flying in as Teela says that Duncan reprogrammed the server spot years ago. They make another run for it as they slide down, or if you're Duncan, you stumble down. And they are then approached by Trapjaw, who says there is nowhere left to run. And I love that Adam thinks that he can use his human resources skills to get out of this. Again, he's not using his fists here. He's trying to use his skills, but they're not working. But Trapjaw isn't taking to any of this as his blade gets closer, and Adam sees how far down it is, and he just can't take him down by tackling him. He just gets thrown meters away. Teela tells him to use the sword, so Adam raises it and says by the power of Grayskull, which ignites the castle, and Adam is now given muscle definition as his clothes are ripped off and replaced with the outfit we knew him from. This is a pretty badass transformation. I like this transformation.
Very Donald Blake-ish.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
It's a Thor reference, by the way.
I know,
everybody.
I got it. Just keep bringing Thor up.
It's kind of hard not to. I mean, when you got a blonde guy who picks up a weapon that turns him into a super being... And his arch nemesis is a sorcerer wielding a staff in most instances.
Well, here we are an hour in and we're getting our first transformation. Adam, I'm guessing you're thinking this is too long in to get a transformation.
It's funny. When this happened, and I didn't want to look at my watch, even though I was kind of feeling it, I go, I bet this is almost exactly the halfway mark. So I looked over and I looked and I was like, son of a bitch! But yeah, it is almost exactly 1 hour to the minute. I do think this is why we had a 20-minute opening that was all on Eternia and a battle scene. Because you normally would edit that in spaces throughout the movie. Space. So I think they did that because they knew we weren't going to get this for a while. But I think it looks good. I think the transformation looks pretty good. You know, he brings out his hard body. Matt is up at attention and his power sword has the power as well. he looks good. He looks like E-Man.
There's definitely a salute in the theater. Yep.
I love Adam's look of achievement as he just raises the sword and his... But he's then attacked by Trapjaw, and this causes Teela to say, we're screwed. Trapjaw picks him up and is then kicked in the balls as He-Man just deflects bullets Wonder Woman style. This was something he could not do in that cartoon, was deflect bullets. I don't remember him doing that, and I just watched this whole
thing.
Yeah,
so now
he's
got Wonder Woman ability?
Yeah. That took me by surprise.
And I did not need the commentary the whole time they were fighting. The cut to a joke. I don't want fucking Star-Lord, man. I don't. I like the fight scene, but let it go 3 minutes without having four or five jokes in between.
Yeah, in the cartoon, he just deflects the bullets using his sword, so he never had wristbands like Wonder Woman.
Well, the last movie already borrowed too much from Star Wars. They couldn't go back to that well, where he uses it like a lightsaber.
Oh, God, yeah. This is, though, to me, this is what, because I heard a lot about how do men deal with things today, the HR part, the getting people to talk about their feelings and all that kind of stuff. This is where I kind of, if I'm explaining this to my son, where I'm like, look, give a chance to talk. See if you can work it out. If that doesn't work and he throws a punch, finish it. Adam tries to talk, and when it doesn't work, he's going to kick your ass right back. And I do think that is a message worth having. Don't throw the first punch, but throw the last.
He-Man grabs Trapjaw's arm and starts taking out the guards with the bullets in it. And they then make their way out and fly away as Skeletor just looks on. Nice shot of the ship flying away as we see Skeletor's cape just kind of flying in the wind. That was a nice shot.
Yeah, it was a cool Darth Vader moment.
Skeletor calls everyone blockheads and he proclaims the sword his. I love Jared Leto in this. Evil Lynch.
Well, I like that they wrote Skeletor like it's an 8-year-old playing action. Like, I think that was very intentional.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah. Evil Lynch just yells after them, get the sword! We then get a Star Wars era battle here as He-Man's ship is shot at and Teela says that Duncan is not going to fly the ship. I like these razor-looking ships. This wasn't something from the cartoons, but it was a good addition to this movie. I dug them.
Yeah, but cool. I do remember the swoop bike that he gets on.
Mm-hmm. Teela tells He-Man to go out and shoot some bad guys. So He-Man gets on a motor scooter-looking thing and then just proceeds to fly it backwards right into the cockpit door. Again, just being the himbo that he is. He gains control, though, as Teela just tips one over with a nice flying move. He-Man is meanwhile falling down as he's literally hanging before he falls right into the ship's window. He punches his way in as Duncan grabs a gun and sees Adam flying a ship. He screams for Adam to get out of the way as he jumps on the ship and throws another one. This was all pretty cool stuff. I liked all this. Teela crashes, as does Adam, and Duncan says, "You can really fly." Meanwhile, Skeletor addresses Eternia and tells them that he will kill them all one by one until they tell him the name of the individual with that big shiny sword.
I felt like that was an absolute deliberate callback to the first movie where it starts with giant hologram Skeletor over Eternia.
Definitely. Yeah.
I like in this movie, he actually monologues when there's people in the room.
Yeah, Adam, I'm with you. I couldn't remember if that was this scene or next. I can't remember if I have a description of it in here or not, but you're absolutely right. He points to Moss Man, and I do like how Lynn just kind of names him on the spot. Like, yeah, he's made of moss, and he's a man. But Skeletor just turns him into mulch. That sucks. I love this character as a kid. We go to the fallen ship as Duncan tries mending fences with his daughter, and then we see Duncan find a box and open it, and we see that it contains his former gear. We cut to Adam waking up asking, "Where am I?" And this is when the sorceress finally makes an appearance. So Adam's happy. So we have Matt happy and Adam happy. He says that he's right by Grayskull as Adam reaches out to the sorceress and she flies away. Teela says that this wasn't the sorceress and tells Adam to follow her. It's starting to get dark. Teela tells Duncan that she hasn't seen him like this in a while. What a place to hold a flask, right? Good lord, this fucking thing that holds this flask? Awesome.
Smart.
Oh, badass. Man-at-Arms says for them to crack open a few and tell some stories of this victory, which Teela questions. Adam sits down as Duncan tries celebrating with him, and Adam asks, "Whatever happened to understanding and listening and talking to one another?" Nice little talk with Adam and Duncan here. He-Man then makes his way to Teela, who asks for some help with the ship. She says his loincloth is in her way, as they have a one-on-one about how it feels being a mighty warrior. She says that she thought about him a lot, and we are getting hints at a kiss between the two as she gives the ultimate cock block by saying she's been thinking about how much their friendship means to her. Oh, this was something that was always played with, right, Adam? Like this whole...
Oh, will they, won't they? Yeah. You know, let's make your toys kit. Oh, but they're friends, but they're... Yeah. And I'm glad that they don't go all the way and go there with it.
Me too. And as I mentioned in the previous podcast, too, when He-Man would rescue other women, you would get shots of Teela just looking like she is jealous as fuck. And it happened last week, too. We talked about when he was tending to Julie, like Teela was really getting some jealous looks in. I thought it was kind of cool that they played with that as well. But we get an interruption by Skeletor. He calls Adam a princess and tells him to bring the sword before him or they will all die horribly. All right, so let's talk about the score here. It's Daniel Pemberton doing the score along with Brian May, as I mentioned. I like the mixture of themes and guitar, and I thought I was going to hate it. Maybe one day we can review all Halloween 6, and I can talk about how much guitars ruined the music in that film. But once the score...
Oh, yes, because music is the only thing wrong with that.
You could always count on the score being good in a Halloween film, and that was the one time it wasn't. But once the score kicks in, the certain parts that have the guitar really worked for me. Adam, you're saying you didn't really like the guitar work here.
No, I thought the guitar was perfectly acceptable. I like Brian May. I thought it was kind of cool that he did. But the main theme that they have going through it, it's literally, I know it because I want to start singing, turn around. Like, it's never-ending story. It's that same synthesizer beat. It's the opening five keys to that. When you rip it that directly, I'm going to notice when it's another movie from my childhood. But I think that kind of 80s pop synth fun that they have going through this fits this kind of film. I think it's a good way to go. There's something that they drop into it that I don't think fits. We'll get there pretty quickly, but I think for the most part, yeah, it goes along with this perfectly fine.
Pemberton to me has been the most consistent composer. I have so many themes of his saved on my Spotify playlist, and I think he's consistent here as well. He did a really good job with the Dark Crystal TV show that they did for Netflix. His music in that is phenomenal. And
I didn't watch that.
Yeah, it was good here. So Adam says that he has to leave before Teela proclaims it a trap, and she says that he is not a god, he's a man. And he responds that he has to save them, as this is what a man does. Again, what it means being a man. But despite these protests, they both say that they're with him every step of the way, and we see the sorcerers flying around as we get a little montage of them walking to Snake Mountain. Adam gets to the guard in front of Snake Mountain and again tries using his human resources tactics, but they're not buying it. Well, Adam, at least you get Snake Mountain here, right? You didn't get it last week, but you're getting it here.
Yeah, so made me so happy to get it. Though, I for all the spaceships you have in this, of course you're going to have a scene where you got to walk across a planet. It's like freaking Predator Badlands.
He-Man is told to surrender his weapon as the guards lead them in, and they are greeted by Evil Lyn. Evil Lyn tells them to take Adam to Skeletor, and the rest can go with her. He walks in and is pushed by the guard as Adam approaches Skeletor. As Adam raises his sword, Skeletor talks and walks away to reveal King Randor. Skeletor demands the sword as Adam has guards, including Kirk, once again approach. The fight is on as He-Man starts kicking all kinds of ass. He uses one guy as a bat as the sword goes flying. He's attacked by Spikor. I was not expecting to see Spikor here, but here he is. And Adam
is got some weird pulls. These henchmen are all deep cuts.
Yes.
The majority of them are, yes.
Yeah. You literally, if you would have had a crowd in this theater, 2/3 of them would have been pointing like Leonardo DiCaprio at the screen every time a new toy pops up.
We even have some of Skeletor's robots here, too, which I was not expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam is punching them out, and Randor just looks on. They get him down, only for him to raise and throw them off. That was kind of cool. I like that move. But He-Man is still out and around when the big guard from earlier approaches. He-Man takes off his spike and pushes him into the pit. He's then stopped in his tracks by Evil Lyn. I like that move he did with Spikor, where he just kind of uses him as against the other guys. That was a kind of cool move.
Yeah, that was cool.
He-Man tries breaking out, but it just causes the walls to cave in. He-Man moves the rocks as Randor starts telling Adam that as a boy, he was so small and there were so many things he could have said but didn't. And as Adam tries expressing what he wants to tell him, Randor dies, because of course he does.
This felt like such a weird moment that they did not know how to play.
Agreed.
Because is Adam supposed to feel responsible for killing his own dad? Yes, but it doesn't play that way. This is almost just like walk into a room as Yoda died, like, and then this monologue that Randor is giving is really bad. I mean, I know it's supposed to be a father-son moment, and I should be completely struck by that, but it doesn't land. The actor's doing a bad job. Like I said, the voice just isn't working, but that it's Adam should feel something, that it's his blast from the sword that kills his dad, but it doesn't even play that. And if you're not going to play that, don't have that moment. This doesn't make any sense the way this happens. None at all.
It's really weird, because instead of playing it like you're mentioning, like he accidentally killed his dad, they're playing it like he let his dad down.
Yeah.
I agree with you. It's weird.
Yeah, and it also doesn't work because he doesn't get 100% redemption out of it, because as we find out at the end, the sword is just a construct. So like, hypothetically, he could have saved his father all along. He just didn't have the ability to do it.
We cut back to Adam, who's now out of He-Man garb, telling his mom that his dad is dead. As we cut to Skeletor holding the sword, he holds it up and
says,
"What
happened? How did my husband die? Don't worry about it, Mom."
Yeah, I got it. Skeletor holds up the sword and says, "By the power of Grayskull, I have the power." Yet nothing happens. And I love him just going, as he tries inching it up.
This is great. Oh. That is a great moment. It's those Skeletor moments. Like this one here, I think, has done just enough. It's absolutely great.
Evil Lyn insists that he needs to say it once more with feeling. He grabs Evil Lyn and asks why it's not working, and she says that there's a ritual that she can perform that will ensure that it does. And then we see Evil Lyn with blonde hair, which, Adam, you didn't like, but this is canon. She did have blonde hair in the cartoon.
Hey, look, she's no Meg Foster. She's no Meg Foster now.
Ouch. Ooh, that is a terrible insult.
Look, I love Alison Brie. She is just bad in this. Make her look like the Baroness. I mean, just something, but she is not good.
And for the record, is that canon with one N or two N's?
Nicely played, sir. We then cut to Duncan talking to Adam about what's new and what's going on inside with his feelings. He then says that he knows how it feels to fail and find out that you're not what you thought you were. He says that he failed Teela as well as Adam, and he had promised that he would protect them. Adam starts laughing and says that Duncan used to tell him you have to get back up and stand tall every time he fells. And Duncan responds, maybe they can both try to get back up together. Tila says that someone wants to say hi, and this is when we re-meet Cringer. I haven't mentioned Cringer this entire podcast, except at the beginning. He did do the opening MGM, which I loved. I love seeing him growl in the MGM logo. But Adam, we don't see Cringer till right now.
And I was disappointed, but if you had to not have him in the movie so that it could actually look good and be this effective, I'm all for it. Because when he shows back up here, you got little kid Adam feeling like big boy He-Man Adam. I am so happy that Cringer is here. This was my toy. I'm a cat person. Yes, I love pussy. Go ahead, make the joke. You know what? Yeah, it's in this. You're making fisting jokes. Yeah, I love pussies. What can I say? I love Cringer. I love Battle Cat. So to have him show up here and look like that same green and orange striped tiger, I'm so happy. I'm not digging the voice, but other than that, I love Cringer here.
No Panther, though. That was odd.
Yeah, I agree. Because I had that figure, too.
Mm-hmm. Me too. And remember, Cringer was like always smooth and Panther was...
It was flocked.
Yeah. Yep.
Sorry, Matt. Skeletor had a purple flocked Panther that was the size of Battle Cat.
Yeah.
I'll take your word on it.
Adam then looks at everyone and calls for a seminar to talk about strategy and team building, with Mechanac adding his 2 cents. He says that when he was on Earth, he learned that success comes down to people working together. He says he knows all of them, including Ram Man, who rams and is a man. He says that he kept all of them close to his heart, and he can't fight for Eternia alone. He says they are going to take back their home together. And then he asks one question: how much can they bench? I haven't laughed this much, guys, during a movie in a while. We cut to Skeletor landing and gathering Trapped Jaw and the rest of his troops. One thing I really like in this movie is the back and forth between Man-at-Arms as he tells this robot not to kill him. At least they gave Elba something to do, right?
Yeah, no, the back and forth with Man-at-Arms and Roboto, I think, has done pretty well. Again, I think of L337 from Solo, which, go back, don't watch the movie, but listen to our podcast, which is more entertaining. That robot and Lando was my favorite part of that movie, and in here, I think they have a similar playfulness with one another, and I think they come across pretty good.
They break the door down as Queen kicks in, and everyone gets their slow motion moment to walk until they walk into the particles left by the door. I love that. At first, I'm thinking, okay, did Stinkor walk in? Like, why are they holding their noses and trying to brush up? No, it's just because all the particles got in their face. The fight ensues, as do the ship's attack, and then we get everyone in action. And Adam, you mentioned Mechanek. I did like seeing Mechanek here. I like seeing him grab somebody and kind of choke them and throw them around. He didn't really do this in the cartoons, did he?
I remember him more of just like a human periscope.
Yeah.
Like same. His head extended, and, you know, he would look over a hill while everybody was hiding. And the movie's not concerned about, why do we have just some humans? Why do we have people that are augmented? Why do we have people with ability? It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And in the toy line, it also didn't matter. I think it's like on Eternia, some people could make like augmentations to themselves, and that was just all it was. It's not worried about it here, and I'm kind of glad, because you could almost have a class society thing going on. Nope, doesn't matter. The whole time this is playing, the entire Princes of the Universe song plays out. And look, I like the song, but I also like Highlander. And I watched the Highlander TV series. To have something that is so ingrained with another piece of sci-fi and to shove it in here, it feels pretty damn out of place.
They get to Grayskull as Tila asks Duncan if he can handle it. He says no, but he's going to give it his best shot. He then tells her that she's the man he wishes he can be. And then Adam invades their personal space, which I love. Cringer asks if he should be wearing armor or something as they get on, much to Cringer's dismay. Skeletor and Evil Lyn enter Grayskull as Cringer barges in. Adam gets his sword as Tila goes after Evil Lyn, and Cringer faces off with Beast Man. Was not expecting Cringer to go against Beast Man, but here we are.
No, I thought we were going to see Panther show up here.
So did I. Duncan shoots down some statues to take out some guards, and then the service bot is shot, and then Man-at-Arms gets his rematch with Trapjaw. He goes in his ship and attacks as the ship loses control. Duncan pulls his jaw down, and then Duncan tends to the service bot whose system is going down. He just caresses her and says, "That's my girl." Meanwhile, He-Man and Skeletor are going at it, with Skeletor saying to He-Man he's trying to annihilate him. He's using the sword to deflect energy from Skeletor's staff until he's blown back by it, and his sword is shattered, causing Skeletor to call it a worthless, silly little toy to play with. Sons of Parents said back in 1985.
As soon as that sword breaks, and as soon as it's clear that there's shards like attached to the hilt, I can see what happens. It is just played. It is so obvious how this is going to go as soon as that thing shatters up.
Okay, then we get to a really interesting part of this film, as Skeletor says that he wants to know who He-Man is so he can get into his head. So we go back to when He-Man was working out. And this time, Dolph is replaced by Skeletor. And can I say I freaking love this montage? And Adam, you saw what he was wearing, right?
Okay, so
go ahead.
I was not aware of the relationship of Travis Knight and his parentage.
Mm-hmm.
So to have Skeletor do this weird thing where he's like puts his hand or whatever he does on He-Man and he can access his memories, and to have fucking Skeletor walking into a gym with a Nike hoodie.
Yes.
Jesus. I had no idea Travis Knight was the son of Phil Knight. No clue. But this is fun, Skeletor. Like, I freaking adore this little silly montage.
Do you know what Travis Knight initially wanted to be?
Didn't he want to be like a rapper?
Yeah, he was going to be a rapper.
His dad like bought him a studio or something?
Yes.
Oh, Jesus. Must be nice.
Yeah, I'm with you. I really enjoyed this montage. Matt, what are you thinking of this montage? You've been pretty bored by this movie. Are you laughing at this?
Well, the hardest I laughed was when Skeletor shows up in the office like Bill Lumberg from Office Space with a coffee mug.
That was
the hardest I laughed in the entire movie.
We see him interfere with Adam's date as he's wearing a nice black cloak. By the way, Then he goes back to the HR office, and like Matt just mentioned, this might be my favorite one as well. As Skeletor's just standing there in a purple shirt and coffee mug, looking like Lumberg in the office space. He tells He-Man that Eternia is not his home and that the dream is over as he plunges the sword right into Adam's chest and flings him back. We then go back to his apartment as he tells his roommate that he might have died, and his roommate says, "What timing, as the rent is due?" We then see the weird talking bird, which actually isn't weird when you consider Adam had a talking cat telling Adam to get up. And this is when the sorcerer says that the power wasn't in the sword, it was in him. As he says that he has the power when he raises the sword, and in the hands of past champions, the power was brute strength. But in his hands, that power becomes so much more. It's empathy and humanity, which is why she chose Adam as the vessel. She now proclaims Adam ready as we cut to him pulling out the sword, which is in pieces. Pieces form again as Adam says the words and Skeletor says the line that actually made me laugh the most. He just goes, "Oh, balls." That's when I laugh. We pan out of Grayskull as all the heroes see that Adam has embraced the power, and Pemberton's theme is, again, I find the theme really great here, even if Adam doesn't. He-Man then takes the sword and tells Skeletor that he has a proposition for him. He asks that they end this violence and talk like an HR person. He says that Skeletor has annihilated his world, but what matters is what he does, so he asks that he do something right. Skeletor walks away cackling and calls him a boob. I love that they got the boob in.
Yep.
So great.
Is that a reference?
He says it in the cartoon almost every fucking episode.
You notice boob.
He then proclaims himself the villain and attacks He-Man, who dodges the attack, but Skeletor throws He-Man away, calling him a feeble child as he doesn't know how to use the power that he has. He-Man says that he knows how to use it, he just prefers not to. And this is when he lands about a dozen Mike Tyson late 80s punches in a row before finally...
Yeah, this turns into a Rocky movie for the last
one. Hold that thought for a few weeks.
Like, I have expected Mickey to be in one of his hallucinations. Yeah. Like Rocky V or whichever one of those.
These slow motion
get up
punches.
Here, son of a bitch.
Before finally going into 80s He-Man cartoon mode and punching him full power. We see. Go ahead.
It's kind of hard to land a movie about toxic masculinity versus gentle, like being in with your feelings, where the hero wins because he beats the shit out of the villain.
Well, the point is he tried. He tried and it didn't work.
And I do think that is the valid discussion. Is like, look, try to talk it out, but that doesn't mean that you let the other guy stick it in you and break it off. Literally.
Yeah.
Try to talk it out. And if not, beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, this is like in Hot Fuzz where he's like, "Stop the violence," and he's like, "Oh, fuck off, grasshopper."
We see Evil Lynn walk up the stairs as Skeletor says that he's willing to talk, but He-Man says the time for talk is over and completely disintegrates Skeletor as his skull rolls away. In the midst of all of this, Cringer has somehow wrapped up Beastman. Teela tells the Squink to get up as Duncan walks in and they walk out together with Cringer. We then cut to 6 months later, as now everyone is formed in the likeness that we knew as in the cartoon. Teela has the headdress, Man-at-Arms now has the bronze plate, and the service bot is now Roboto, a figure, as I mentioned, I had as a kid. We're seeing a bit of a powwow with the gang as they meet Roboto. She says that her makeover is a bit revealing, which causes them to... Okay. This leaning back from the waist and laugh bit is happening, and I turn to Jen, and we both just could not stop laughing for as long as the bit went on. I absolutely fucking loved this.
This happens, and I'm like, oh my god, Garrett's laughing with me, and Matt wants this. Yes. Matt wants credits to roll. Because it's ripped right out of the cartoon. It literally is, Oh, Prince Adam. I mean, it's dead on. So these are little nods to the cartoon. I know they don't play to anybody that didn't watch the cartoon, but I don't think the movie does either.
I love how Cringer was like, what are you guys doing when they're doing that? We then cut to Adam wearing the vest that we came to know him from in the cartoon as Man-at-Arms asks how things are going with his feelings and such. He asks if he ever wants to talk, he's there. Or if he wants to be beat with a stick, he'll also be there. Teela points out that all the heroes he drew as a kid, and when she asks if he had a name for her, he says, Warrior Goddess. And then he says the name that he came up with for himself was He-Man, and they all just end up wondering what the hell would make you come up with a name like that. And then we cut to his roommate, who has somehow showed up here, standing next to the green tiger, as he says, to prove that it was all real. And this is when we're hearing a bit of the He-Man theme from the cartoon as Roboto's red light is blinking, meaning a nearby village is in distress. Teela looks...
Oh, wait, so they literally have a bat phone in the cartoon?
Yes. Teela looks and, in a sarcastic tone, says, this sounds like a job for He-Man. He says that he's going to do that thing as he brings Cringer, who asks if he has to. Everyone else is wondering if they should look away because in the cartoon it's only Man-at-Arms and the Sorceress and Orko who know his secrets, so they call that out as well. Man-at-Arms says to just let him do his thing. As the theme picks up and we see He-Man riding Battle Cat into battle and credits roll on He-Man. How'd you guys feel? Before I get to the credit scenes, and yes, I did stick around. How'd you guys feel about how this ended initially?
I got Cringer in full Battle Cat armor.
Which, yes, you did.
Am I a little bothered? Because in the series, when Adam pulls the sword and I have the power, it transforms Cringer into Battle Cat. They don't do that here. Whatever, I could get over that. But it looks so good. I'm cheesing as a 10-year-old boy. It's cheesy, it's goofy, but this ends for me. A lot of this movie feels like Dungeons & Dragons from a couple years ago. Such a easy to... swallow fun good time that I'm watching it, that it gets to the end and I'm like, yep, I can go along with this too.
And Matt, you're just looking to get out, right?
Largely yes. I felt like the movie kind of overstayed its welcome for me.
All right, well, you guys probably thought that I was going to do my
and then the movie said, oh yeah, fuck you, there's another 10 minutes of credits and
but wait, there's more.
You guys probably thought that I was going to do my thing and just bust out of that crowded theater to beat traffic, right? That's what I always do. But for the first time since the first Avengers movie, I stuck around for not one, not two, but three end credit scene. And man, oh man, did this first one make me smile. We have an updated Orko telling us the lesson we learned from this episode.
So for every cartoon, I can't remember the year that it stopped, they were required to have what was called an EO, yep. An EQ, the educational quotient of the day. Every single cartoon was required to have it. And that if they didn't spell it out in it, they spelled it out with something like this at the end of the cartoon. That's why G.I. Joe did it. That's it. Oh my God. This was so funny. I'm kind of glad we didn't have Orko in the movie. I don't think he would have fit, but this is a good time.
And if you look
is
back,
it's supposed to be the little monster thing from the canon movie.
It's no,
the thing the monster replaced.
Yeah, this is what Gwildor instead of this, but Orko is an like an interdimensional imp that can do magic in the cartoon.
So he's the Mr. Mischief Pidlick of He-Man?
Pretty much, yeah.
I like that this is the thing that South Park made fun of whenever the episode ends with, you know, I think I learned something today.
Yep.
And if you look close back there, you can see Merman. He's back there as well, which they didn't
include in this movie.
Yeah. All right. We then see the Sorceress telling Man-at-Arms that she had given up hope of seeing both of them again. Man-at-Arms says that perhaps one day she'll come back to us too as we cut to a sword being formed and we see Adora from behind holding the sword and turning into She-Ra. Kind of a cool tease,
and they play the strings of the theme for that She-Ra cartoon. I wish I didn't know that this was an end credit scene. But of course, nobody could help but be like, post fucking pictures and shit. Because people absolutely suck when it comes to movies. We are patient as all hell when it comes to books and everything else. But God forbid we don't post a freaking screenshot of a movie theater. But this is cool. I think a live action She-Ra would be pretty badass. Since they can't figure out a way to do Red Sonja with any type of success, give us a cool She-Ra.
Yeah, and Travis Knight has said that he has an actress in mind for She-Ra if he were to get the green light.
I do think, like, look, Amazon, I don't think they really care whether or not they lose $50 million, $100 million on this. It's a tax write-down. I do think we're going to get a She-Ra film.
So, Matt, you stuck around for this too, huh?
I stayed until the credits were completely over because I was told to stick around. I had knowledge that there were post-credit scenes. Did I know how many there were going to be? No.
I did like the style of the credits as well. I thought they were really cool. Yeah. The way that they look, the drawings and stuff that they did. Because they even drew characters in from that 87 movie into the credit backgrounds, which I thought was neat.
Although, I will say, this last one that we're about to talk about was Worthless. The most obvious one of the three.
Yep.
Well, it's kind of a call back to the canon film, right? So after many minutes of credits, we see that Evil Lyn has now found Skeletor's skull. So we know that she's going to perform some sort of black magic on him to bring him back in the sequel that'll probably never happen. But I thought this was a cool tease, too. Like I said, I just think this is a call back to canon.
Oh, yeah. Well, she says that he'll be back.
Mm-hmm. All right. That does it for Masters of the Universe on a scale of 1 to 10. What do we give Masters of the Universe? This should be a huge variety of scores. Adam, go ahead.
Man, I didn't know what I was going to make when this film came out. I mean, we had heard about this thing for so long. There had been so many different animated permutations of it. They've changed the toy line over and over again. They've tried to make, you know, almost like the Star Wars Unleashed type of figures where they were ultra realistic and things like that. So they've done just so many different types and this is one of those where every other year, hey, guys, we're going to discuss He-Man. Yeah, sure we will. Don't put it on the schedule till we see a trailer. And then finally it was like, ah, shit. Okay, it's going to happen. And I wish I would have seen this opening weekend with a bigger crowd. Didn't work out. I wish I could have got my kids to care enough to go see this with me because I do think this is one of those just fun time movies. I think the cast does a good enough job. I know that's not high praise, but there's nobody in this that is a star. I mean, Idris Elba's the closest we have, and I wish he was a star, but I got to be honest about it. I think he's one of the best actors, but he's not a star. Jared Leto, you won't find him in this movie, so I can't even say that. But I do think that, you know, this is one of those movies that's just a fun time to watch. But look, I wish it was 30 minutes shorter. And I know that's a lot of time, but 220 is a big investment that didn't need to be there. Bring this thing in at an hour 50, hour 55. And I feel like I say this frequently, but there's a lot of gristle and you could have made this just flow really smoothly. With that said, I like it. I smile throughout this film. Nicholas Galanzine, he's He-Man, he's Adam. I don't need Dolph Lundgren. I wish we had somebody like that, but there's not an actor out there that could do that kind of thing. I can't think of anybody that would be He-Man that I could say, yes, that person would step into the role because they don't exist. I think the jokes go on a little too long. Like I said, I laugh at Fisto for 3 times. I'm not laughing by the 7th time. Saying Ram Man, give head. I don't understand that because that's just not he's not head man. So, okay. I think Kristen Wiig actually, you know, steals the show as Roboto. I think she does a good job. So I compare this to Dungeons and Dragons. And I think it's got a lot of that where people are going to miss this. And when they go back and watch it later, they're going to go, huh, I enjoyed that. And it's never going to do enough that it's going to get a direct sequel. I think She-Ra will get her film, but I don't see He-Man coming back, Skeletor coming back, unless it's in service of She-Ra, Hordak, the Horde, and kind of a combination film. But when I walked out of the theater, I was smiling, I was laughing, I was glad I saw it. I've seen a lot of worse films, and I've not had many that have decided to just embrace the pop culture, bubblegum, candy-coated goodness of the 80s. You know, this does get lazy a little bit in its over-HR-ing of He-Man, but I can take into the end of the day, try to talk. If that doesn't work, sure, beat the shit out of them. But at least you tried. And that is kind of my philosophy with a lot of things. And I tried to talk first. I have fun. That's kind of what I want for my $20. So I'm going to give this a 7. Not good or not great. Not bad. Just a good 2.5 hours at the movie theater. 7 on 10.
Yeah, after trailers, it was definitely 7.5 or 2.5.
Oh my God. I had to plan, knowing that I was going to add 35 minutes of trailers and commercials was the problem, because you got to block a 3-hour block to watch this shit.
All right, Matt. How painful was it for you? Go ahead.
I'm going to say something that I've never said on the podcast and will probably never say it again. Two things, actually. So this is a very monumental occasion. You goddamn nerds. Number one. Number two, this is the more shocking thing. Jared Leto was the best thing in a movie. And I can't believe I said those words unironically, because I think he was actually great, and I was not expecting that at all. To the point where I kind of wanted this to be like the Wicked of He-Man, where it's told from Skeletor's point of view. But he's just unapologetically evil, but I have to judge the movie that we have. And I think it's broadly fine. Emphasis on broad, because I think the humor certainly falls into that category, and Lord knows I laugh at a lot of dumb shit. And I will say my sense of humor can fluctuate more than Jonah Hill's weight has over the last 20 years. But all things tipping the scales, this is just not something that I have an affinity for, in the same way that I don't for like Transformers. But when something's good, I will sort of jump to the other side. And much like this movie, I will try to talk to it and understand it. And look, I'm not going to beat the shit out of it because I didn't like it. But I'd be lying to you both if I said that I did not feel the 2 hours and 20 minutes. And I know I'm saying that a lot lately, but Hollywood, stop making these movies 2.5 hours out of obligation. Not because you actually warrant it. I wonder, again, like I said, if this movie was the right avenue to explore its themes. I think it lands on some of it, but I think it does miss some as well. It's like watching a Rocky movie where not all the punches land. And I'm not just saying these because we may or may not be reviewing those movies in the not-too-distant future, but nowhere near as long as it took to get this movie actually made, so that's positive fan. Will I watch this again? Probably not. Was this interminable or something that I just would not recommend, give the thumbs down in that binary type of logic? No. So I'm going to give it a 6 because there was more here that I liked than I didn't. But gosh, this could have been a very crisp 2 hours, a little bit more simplified, a little bit more streamlined. And for God's sake, if somebody yelled cut, I think it would have had a really fun, really solid throwback type of adventure movie in the way that, not that it has this hard of an edge, but like the best of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, like that type of swashbuckling fun with fantasy. And not just because the first movie has skeletons too, but I don't think it's quite that. But I'm going to give it a 6, and I'm glad that apparently, based on reading the vocal language of the two guys on this show, not named myself, this was clearly something made for the fans that I'm glad you guys got it, because I know a lot of other properties around this time have not had the same treatment. I mean, Lord knows I'm still waiting for a good Power Rangers movie. Don't worry, guys, we won't review those until we're about to die. Even then, maybe in the next life, I don't even think we'll get to it if we're still doing this in the clouds. But all in all, it's a 6. It's a fun time, but I can't say it was a great time because I was there for a long time.
You know, Adam, I owe you an apology because last year when we did Predator, Killer of Killers, you proclaimed that Trachtenberg had made that film for you. And what I said in response to that was, well, in order to appeal to a broader audience, you need to make it for more people than just the core audience. Those words are getting thrown right back in my face. Because honestly, if it were up to me, I'd give this movie a 10 out of 10. Because I had a blast watching this movie. I had so much fun. The most fun I've had at the movies in a long time. But that was because I felt that Travis Knight had made this movie for me. And what is also getting thrown back in my face is what I said in response is, well, if he's going to appeal to a broader appeal, you got to appeal to people who were not alive in the 80s. You got to appeal to people who were born in the 2000s. You need to appeal to a broader audience than what he does. This movie, as me and Adam have proven, was right up our alley. But as Matt has proven, is not up others' alley, which is why it is flopping at the box office. However, even taking the fact that I had such a fun time watching this, I gotta look at this from a critical point of view. Adam has done a remarkable job of pointing out some plot holes that when you look at this, it's like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense that Beastman's there. It doesn't make any sense that Tila's there. It doesn't make any sense that the roommate all of a sudden shows up out of nowhere. It really doesn't. However, I am seeing my childhood come to life here, and it's in a lot of ways just hitting a sweet spot that a movie that, say, J.J. Abrams tries making, making tries to do, and it doesn't. He tried doing this with Super 8 back in 2011, trying to hit that spot with that Spielberg Amblin feel, and he doesn't. This hits it, yet there are problems. As many problems as Canon? Absolutely not. But Canon didn't have near the budget that Amazon had for this. Would I be excited for a further adventure? Well, we'll talk about that here in a bit. But for what this movie is, for what this movie felt, and for how me and Jen could not stop talking about it after and smiling after each and every sentence, this is the same score that Adam gave. I'm giving this a 7. It's a grand time. See it in the movies while you can. Of course, by the time this podcast is out, that opportunity will probably disappear. But man, I had a blast with this. 7 out of 10 for Masters of the Universe from me. All right, that does it for Masters of the Universe. Adam, is there any chance that Amazon carries this on? Any at all?
I think it's possible. Just because when you look at Amazon Productions, I think they're going to try to ramp it up. And I think they're going to at least try to say, look, we've built some digital assets that we can use, and we have these people under contract. Let's try to do it. And I think if they lose $150 million on a movie, they can say, that's fine. That helps offset taxes. It's not like WB who's going to shit can a movie. You know, Amazon's just going to say, that's fine. We'll take the write down, but we're going to put it out. So I do think it's possible. And I think that there's a wide world of Eternia that they could do that with. But I think it's going to be a combination film with She-Ra, He-Man. Maybe Evil Lyn brings that skull to Hordak, which, sorry, Matt, that's that thing that She-Ra was looking at. That's Hordak. That's the evil horde. So I do think maybe we get a team-up film more than two different solo films.
All right. That does it. Masters of the Universe is behind us. But as the person who schedules these podcasts, Matt, we're not done with toys, are we? Why don't you go ahead and outline our next retrospective?
Well, perfect segue. We're going from a franchise that we've never done before to one we've actually done before at the old place, because some things can't be locked in the toy box forever. So dig out your Randy Newman compositions and your box of tissues, not necessarily at the same time. And we'll be reviewing the Toy Story movies, because lo and behold, it's 2026 and Pixar made another one. Not just that, they've made two since we did this back at the old place. We've had a spinoff and we've had a fifth installment, so it felt as good a time as any to bring back Toy Story. And like I said, you know, we've reviewed these movies at the old place, but one person on this network has never made their thoughts vocally clear, and I have a feeling that there's going to be some fighty because it's us.
All right, that third would be you, Adam. What are you expecting when we get to Toy Story? We have not 4 films to do, but 6 films to do.
I completely forgot there was a spinoff film in this series. Bless it. Oh, I'd rather go to Woody's Roundup. I can't wait to discuss these. I do think we're going to be fighty. Those that know me know that I've had some choice words about one installment in this compared to others. I still think Bug's Life is a better movie than Toy Story. I will hold that. So, spoiler. But I can't wait to discuss this. We've done some serious movies. We've done some other stuff. I know we did Incredibles, but we haven't done an animated series of this kind of length. And just because it's animated doesn't mean there's not themes as strong as any other type of film. So I'm looking forward to this, especially one that has lasted this long. I think this is going to be a good time.
I can't believe after different seasons, we're going to go to another emotional fucking series, because yeah, those movies do get pretty emotional. But all right, that's our next series. Can't wait to announce the one after, but I'll hold that close to the vest until we get to the end of that one. Guys, I'm sorry, Matt, you did not have a good time watching these. I sure as hell had a fun time discussing them with you. Did you at least have fun doing the podcast, sir?
Go ahead. I'm happy it's over.
Okay, until next week when we get to Toy Story. Good journey. Thank you, boys.
People of Eternia! I stand before the great eye of the galaxy, chosen by destiny to receive the powers of Grayskull. This inevitable moment will transpire before your eyes, even as He-Man himself bears witness to it.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
I don't like adventures.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
I guess this is really goodbye, huh?
Army only means one thing. More targets.
If you like this retrospective review, check out our archives at percolatedmedia.net, as we have tons of franchise reviews such as the Alien film series, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, the ongoing Marvel films, films of the DC universe featuring Superman and Batman, the John Wick franchise, the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World film series, Avatar, and so much more.
What do you think?
Sounds great.
God, I wish it would shut up. Well, thanks.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
Skeletor. It's over.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way. Please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
I have selected your finest warriors.
A Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, and Dave.
Are you a master? Yes, you are. I know that.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
I feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone or something.
Scheduling done by Matt.
Someone is speaking to me.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
It would be a pity to waste their talents.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production. Copyright 2026, and any and all music, movie, and sound clips are used for entertainment purposes and review only.
Tell me about the loneliness of good, He-Man. Is it equal to the loneliness of evil?
Good journey. Got my beer, so I'm ready to go.
Got your beer. Okay. Count me down.
I had a smart ass way to count down, but I lost it. All right. I was going to do like three, like I have the power spread out with 3, 2, 1, but I couldn't. My brain wasn't fast enough. It'll pick up surely, but 3, 2, 1.
Masters of the Universe.
Way to go, AMC.
Always thinking.
Well, has Amazon ever made a movie that's like made a profit?
Hail Mary. Project Hail Mary. They did that one.
Okay.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, can't wait for them to do Bond.
Oh, God. Oh. I am waiting for the rage text from Matt when that sucker starts ramping up and they start announcing casting. Okay.
Yeah, but I'm gonna do my best to give it the benefit of the doubt, but I have as much hope for that as you do about James Gunn's DC movie.
Well, let's talk about... You are absolutely right. Jared Leto was nowhere to be seen in the press for this. They tried so hard to hide the fact that he was in this. If you look at the marketing, he's not in a cast list at all. Oh, there's my mom. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom.
He's not in the cast list.
For those that don't know, the last 2.5 to 3 years, he very privately went through some very harrowing cancer struggles, almost lost his life, almost took his own. Those of you that know, I love listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. It's a very passionate discussion. And I think him coming back and starting to do things again, that would have been just amazing. But I think he was happy to be out on the circuit talking about this film. But God, I don't know how you screw that up and not have him be Randor.
Listen to that interview after you listen to the Allison Mack interview.
Don't listen to that interview.
I just love riling you up by mentioning it. They then notice that the sorceress is in Grayskull as she's looking at Eternia getting attacked. So this is when
here's the reason.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go. Go ahead.
Hey, here's the reason you could get Adam to go see this movie. Damn it. Just hold back a little bit, you know, because it's funny, but then it stops being funny.
And you know how we say things come in threes?
Yeah, so did Matt.
This will be a perfect blooper. They just announced a Thundercats movie.
Oh!
Now, there's something that came out after my time, so I have no idea about Thundercats. So, Adam takes
my
off...
My power sword just activated.
Adam takes off in his...
good job.
Matt, what'd you think of T-Layer? And have you seen this chick, since you're the younger one of this podcast?
Yeah, but I never watched Riverdale.
Oh.
I saw her...
That's your kind of show, Garrett.
I saw her in... what was the name? I saw her some other like really small movie. It was called Coyote Lake. I don't know if you ever saw that.
No.
Right. Well, it's not great. But that's the only thing I've seen her in. I appreciate that they didn't...
I'll be back.